from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made 17 years ago when an international theater singing contest was born to recognize young singer actors ages 19 to 32. It's called the Latileña Competition, and it really has grown into an international event with remarkable talent. You have a chance to see the results coming up this weekend. And it just so happens that a second singing competition is also unfolding in Rochester this coming weekend. Been almost a decade for Classical Idol, a competition focused on operatic talent. Later this hour, we will dive into the world of opera with the preview of Classical Idol that's coming up this weekend. But we're going to open with our eyes on Latileña. The free competition will give the public, I should say free for the public to come see it. None of the, if you know anybody in music, you know there's a lot of resources being poured into competing, traveling, etc. And let me welcome some guests who help us understand what's coming up here. First of all, in studio, Kim Kowalki is a professor of musicology at Eastman and in so many ways the mind behind this competition. It's great to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
On the phone with us is Rebecca Luker, three-time Tony nominee and a Latileña judge. Rebecca, thank you for taking the time.
I'm happy to be here. And hi, Kim. Hi, Evan.
Hey, Rebecca. Welcome.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful to have you. For our listening audience, Rebecca has starred in Phantom, The Secret Garden, Showboat, The Sound of Music, Music Man, Nine, Mary Poppins, and Cinderella. And this will be year three for you judging Latileña, Rebecca?
It will, yes. It's such a fun thing to do.
Well, Kim, we go back 17 years, is that right? I hope I had the history right. But this really all started why?
Started in 1998 because that was the centenary of the birth of Latileña, the wife of Kurt Vile and a famous singing actress in her own right. Most listeners would probably remember her best as Colonel Klebb in From Russia with Love, the one who tried to kill James Bond with the stiletto in her shoe. But she was also, the first Jenny in the Threepenny Opera, and she starred on Broadway in Cabaret and was a real icon. And in celebration of her 100th birthday, it coincided with the arrival in Rochester of all of Kurt Vile's European autographed scores that are now housed in Sibley Music Library. And so we decided we'd have a little festival. And part of that festival, I brainstormed this idea that we would have a singing competition in honor of Latileña. And that year, it just started restricted to Eastman students, and I think we had 18 competitors. But what made it very special for them was that the judging panel consisted of Julius Rudell, the famous conductor from New York City Opera, and Teresa Stratus, the legendary soprano from the Metropolitan Opera, who had become sort of Lenya's heir apparent in the Vile repertoire. And because Teresa was so taken with the idea of the competition, she returned 8 other times. It's the only competition she's ever judged. She doesn't believe in them, but she did in this one.
She doesn't believe in competitions?
Right. Now, this is somebody you have to remember who was already singing at the Metropolitan Opera, yeah, leading roles at the age of 19. So she didn't really need competitions to make her own career.
Yeah, well, wow. And so that's 17 years ago. But now, set the stage for us for Kim first, and then we'll talk to Rebecca about her role and so much of what judges might be looking for. Because the two competitions we're looking at this hour are different, Latileña and Classical Idol. So Latileña, set the stage for us. What's coming up this weekend?
Well, there were 250 contestants who started out by either auditioning live in New York or sending videos. From that group, 28 semifinalists were chosen, and they competed in New York over a 2-day period in March. And those auditions consisted not only of them being judged, but also coached. Rebecca has been a wonderful coach at the semifinals in previous years, but this year she's coming back to judge the finals. And out of those 28, 14 were chosen to be here in Rochester. And they come from all over the world, really. The farthest is from Munich, one from London, and then all over the United States and Canada. And I think this group is probably the most compact in terms of talent, in that that I don't think the outliers, the top and the bottom of the group, whatever that may turn out to be, are very far apart. I think it's a uniformly strong group of 14.
Kim, when did...
Oh,
go ahead, Rebecca.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Evan.
Oh, no, I did. Trust me. I don't want to get in your way at all. In fact, it's a great honor to have you on the line with us. I just have so many questions about how this kind of competition goes from 18 local students to an international event. And Rebecca, best I can understand, there are competitions in various cities around the world, and there's kind of a circuit of competing and trying to win prize money and in many ways, this has become a very serious circuit, but it can't be easy for competitors. It can't be easy to travel not knowing, you know, just how far you go. And the investment of time and resources has to be pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is amazing. And the other thing I love about the Lottie Lania competition is that every singer that competes walks away with something, with some, you know, monetary prize or other. And can you still hear me?
Absolutely.
Sort of went silent. Oh, there we go. I gotcha. And so that's a great thing for a young person, a struggling artist, most of them probably are. So I love that. So their travel is paid for, and they probably have a little something extra as well. Even the ones that don't receive a prize in the end, they do walk away with something. But yeah, it's got to be very hard and very stressful on these young people. And I'm very impressed with them every year. Every one of them is, you know, poised and wonderful and prepared. And, you know, when you get 14 people out of 250, you're going to get, you know, the cream of the cream of the crop. And it's just a real honor to be judging them. Sometimes I think, you know, they teach me more than I have anything to say about them. And it's really a wonderful experience.
Well, 14, again, she's exactly right, Kim. I mean, you now have such a pick of a wide range of talent. When did you know... How quickly did this event go from 17 years ago, 18 essentially local students, to the international event that it is now?
I would say about 10 years ago, which would be about 7 years into it. Mm-hmm. We went regional, sort of the tri-state New England, and then we went national and had regional live auditions, and then it went international. This year, our 250 applicants came from 17 different countries on four continents.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's about as international as a theater singing competition can be that emphasizes such a wide range of repertoire. Opera and operetta, everyone has to do one selection in that category, one written by Kurt Weill, and then two American musical theater selections, one after about 1968, the Hair Cabaret sort of cutoff period, and then one from before what we call the Golden Age of Broadway.
Rebecca, when you look at the wide range that they have to perform, when you were making your career early on, did you think about zeroing in on one genre? Did you think about the importance of being able to do sort of a wide range like we see in Lottie Lania?
You know, I did. That's a very good question. I think generally a young singer knows what their strength is. You know, if your opera is an entirely different world, and I flirted with that early on in college, but I knew that my voice wasn't that big. And I naturally went towards musical theater. So musical theater, I knew was my you know, in my wheelhouse. But yes, I've also tried to be very versatile as a singer throughout my career. I tell young singers that all the time. I think a good singer is a good singer. You need to know how to sing jazz and, you know, pop and Broadway and a little bit of operetta. And I think it's very important. And yes, I focused on all those things growing up.
Talking to Rebecca Luker, three-time Tony nominee, and a Lottie Lania judge coming this weekend to Rochester for the event here. And so, as you've said, Rebecca, when you're down to 14 finalists, you're going to have outstanding talent. But I still have to think that within that 14, there are some who have, you know, they may be proficient in everything, but they may be tremendously outstanding in show tunes or tremendously outstanding in their viol selection or in their operetta. Do you see that as a judge and you know, how do you sort of evaluate person to person, knowing that some may have slightly different strengths?
Oh, yes. Kim, you should join in with this, because it's something we generally agree every year on who should be the top tier people. But it is very difficult when you have one, say, exceptional opera singer who is also pretty good in the musical theater genre and in the Kurt Weill genre, and then you have just the opposite. So it's very challenging and a lot of fun, actually, trying to whittle down who is pretty good in all of them, you know. And so we're looking for that star quality, that person who has an overall grasp of each of them. So it's very hard to find that those few people, but they're in there, you know. So we generally don't give the top prize to someone who's just good in the opera or just good at the Kurt Weill or just good at the Broadway. But it's very, very hard to find one that does all of them well, but they're in there, and it's amazing when you see them perform. They're really talented, these young people.
Kim?
And it varies from year to year. Early on in the competition, it seemed like the big voices, the opera singers, tended to win more than the musical theater pros. And I think it's changed a little. And one year you'll have a preponderance of one or the other. I remember 3 years ago we had a situation where an Eastman student named Matt Grills had just won the Metropolitan Opera auditions, and he won ours eventually as well. It's the only time it's ever happened where one person has won both. But that same year we had, Rebecca, I don't know if you were a judge that year, but we had also Justin Hopkins and Jacob, and one was an opera singer and one was a musical theater singer. They both have fabulous careers right now, and I remember that you three judges, we were long delayed in coming back with the results because you each wanted a different one to win the top prize. So we had three different votes. It was really an interesting discussion.
And you drew straws?
No, we gave one first by just the nose, and then two second prizes. So
two tied.
Right.
And again, what are the prizes, Kim?
Top prize is $15,000, which is, I think, now at the top tier, along with the Met and maybe the George London, for the highest award in national competitions. And then 10,000 second, 7,500 third. Then we have a number of other prizes to recognize precisely what Rebecca was talking about, those people who excel at one thing or another but are not presenting yet the whole package. And so we try to recognize them with awards of about 3,500 each.
All right. Well, the 2014 winner was Ben Enquist. And I'd like to listen to just a moment, just a few moments, I should say, of his performance. This is from 2014 at La Dalena, and Ben is performing here, Me, from Beauty and the Beast, with just the right amount of pomposity, I think. Let's go ahead. Now, the sound quality here, this sounds a little bit like we're listening in the audience. We're not plugged right into the system. We're just listening in the audience. We'll listen to Ben and come back and talk about why he won. This is the first one. Yeah, go ahead, Val.
This equation proves man doesn't fail to steal. On occasion, women can have their uses too, mainly to extend the family tree. Bucking, extend with me.
Rebecca, I want to make it clear,
that
is a perfect song to follow last hour. We just did an hour-long discussion on the gender pay gap. And so now it's perfect that we've got Ben Enquist talking about the uses of women mainly extending family trees. I just wanted you to fill you in. Couldn't have dovetailed more perfectly there.
That's so funny.
Kim, tell me a little bit about Ben Enquist.
Ben Enquist won last year, and he was the youngest of the competitors. He was only 23. And his program was the shortest. So it exploded two myths about how to win a competition all in one. Ben had the whole package, in the opinion of the judges, because he broke their hearts with a number from an American opera by Jake Heggie. And then he brought down the house with this number from Beauty and the Beast. And in between, he sang, as I recall, Lonely Town from On the Town. And I forget what is his Kurt Weill number was. Oh, it was This Is New from Lady in the Dark. And he just did, he nailed each one in style, fully in the moment. And that's what we're really looking for, is someone who could be cast as that character on a professional level in each one of the four genres.
And so,
did I meet Ben at the semifinals? I'm not sure that I did.
I don't think so. I think that was Janine Tesori did coached him there.
Yep. Okay. Yes. He's wonderful. Oh my word.
Yeah.
Beautiful voice.
Even just that sort of mediocre quality sounding record, you could hear just the power of his voice. And so, Kim, how enjoyable is it for you now to track careers as you go forward? From
wonderful. In the beginning, you know, we were thrilled if somebody got to sing in a regional opera company or something. Now we can't keep track of them. Last year's winners, Ben was at Glimmerglass last summer, and this summer he will be back as Papageno in all of the Magic Flute performances. Someone who won a minor award last year, the Lee Simonette Award, Katie Travis, is now Christine in the national tour of Phantom and singing the role that Rebecca once sang.
That's perfect.
I think we have 12 singing at the Met right now. A local woman from Eastman named Annalisa Lemming, who won about 6 years ago. You remember her, Rebecca.
I've worked with Annalisa.
She's now in On the 20th Century. It's her first Broadway show. So she's thrilled with that. And 2 years ago, what was his name? Doug Carpenter won, and his career has just taken off. He was in Most Happy Fellow at Goodspeed. Then he went to do cable at New Jersey Paper Mill. And now he's on the national tour of Dirty Dancing as a lead. So.
Wow. And, you know, Ben is so young, 23. He's a bass baritone, which is very young for a bass baritone. So, boy, he's got so many years ahead of him. You know, it's amazing.
Well, before I let Rebecca go here, we've got a few minutes left as we talk about La Dolina, and then we're going to transition and talk about Classical Idol here as we talk about singing competitions coming to Rochester. but Kim, I'd be remiss if we didn't just get the information for our audience again. So, if they want to get involved this coming weekend, what are all the details?
At 11 a.m. in Kilburn Hall is the preliminary round, where each contestant
11 a.m. on
Saturday, the 18th, and each contestant then presents their full program of four numbers. They have 15 minutes to do so. About 1 o'clock, we'll take a short lunch break. About 1:45, we'll resume, and then we'll have seven more contestants, and that'll end about 3:30. Then the judges will deliberate and decide which of the four numbers they will have the contestants sing in the evening that they want to see again, and there'll be two each. And at that point, at 8 o'clock in the evening, we will have a concert where each contestant sings two numbers, and then a brief intermission. You hear that, Rebecca? Brief, while we while we get the judges' decisions.
And better hurry. Okay.
And then
I'll decide quickly.
And then we'll award the prizes. I should say that I think this year will put us over $750,000 that's been awarded to young performers, and so that's a real milestone for the competition too.
And
that's wonderful.
For the audience members to attend?
Free.
It is free.
But in the evening especially, come a little early because we are usually standing room only.
Okay.
It fills up quickly.
All right. Yeah. Well, Rebecca, before I let you go, we don't always have a three-time Tony nominee on the line with us, so let me just at least check in with you on a couple of things here. We often talk on this program just about how difficult art can be in terms of an industry in various forms, just how difficult it is to make it as a career. And you seem to me to be the kind of person who is really celebrating the success of others. I know it can be very, very competitive. But for those who are 23 years old, not all of them are going to be like Ben, and they're going to win a competition like La Dolina. But a lot of them they move to New York. I know a couple who moved from Rochester to New York. And, you know, they're waiting tables, doing their best to pick up work where they can. I mean, that is life for a lot of people. But, you know, in broad strokes, what general ideas do you have for people about the way the industry works and the way to approach it?
Oh, my goodness. it is a very tough business, no question about it. And you have to have such a passion for it and such a determination to be as good in your art as you can be. You know, I tell young actors and young singers to see everything they can, read everything they can, you know, take class, try to get into every reading and workshop you can, and network and meet people and learn about your craft, learn everything you can, the history of your craft even. You know, I'm always so astonished when I meet young actors who don't know anything about the people that came before them, you know, what happened before them. And I think it's very important to know about all that. And, you know, that's basically my best advice. And if you are good at what you do, I truly believe someone will notice, someone will, you know, you will start to work, and then work begets work. And you know, the best thing you can do is just be good at your craft. That's the best advice I have.
I know a young woman who is waiting tables at Bar Balloud right across from the Met, and so she's a tremendous voice. She took martial arts in college to try to learn different skills. She took dance and all kinds of things. But it reminds me, Rebecca, of two things. Number one, she's this tremendously huge voice. I thought you're destined to make it, you know. And, you know, she's still working in the restaurant industry because you look across the way at the Met and you dream, but it's hard to do it. Second of all, she wanted to learn all those other skills because she didn't just want to rely on a voice. And I know Lata Lenya is about that as well. How important is being able to present and perform and act?
Oh, it's tremendously important. I mean, those individuals who win this competition are actors and performers who can move very well. They can inhabit a variety of different characters. You know, and in order to do that, you really have to study. And you have to be born with a certain amount of natural talent. But those are things you need to develop: your dance skills, your movement skills. You know, anything like that. You know, your language skills. You need, your voice needs to be very, very versatile in its speaking and in its singing. And so, I mean, I think it's just incredibly important to have a variety of talents like that. But it's such a hard business because this young woman that's working at, you know, Bar Balloud, she, you know, maybe she doesn't have representation, and that's another reality of the business, that you have to have an agent or a manager in order to get appointments. And so, I mean, not always, but it certainly helps. And there, it's really, really hard to be successful, but it's possible. It really is. If you're talented, it's completely possible.
All right, Rebecca, the one show you have never done and you are dying to do.
You know what? Speaking of Lata Lenya, I'm going to say Cabaret, because my husband Danny Burstein just closed it on March 29th. He was, you know, he was Herr Schultz, and I've really always wanted to play, you know, what's her face? Why I just blanked.
Sally Bowles?
No, not Sally Bowles. The wife of Herr Schultz.
Oh,
yeah.
Frau Schneider. Yeah, Fräulein Schneider.
I've always wanted to play Fräulein Schneider because, to me, it's a very interesting role, and I love her songs, and I think it's a wonderful acting role as well. So anyway, yeah, I'd love to do that.
Okay.
Before I'm too old one day.
And best feeling you've ever had on stage?
Oh, gosh. Opening nights are pretty exciting. The opening night of Music Man was very exciting. Yeah, it's one of my favorite musicals in the world, and to finally get to do it and on Broadway was pretty amazing.
Are you sure you don't think that landing safely as the fairy godmother in Cinderella wouldn't be your favorite moment?
You know, that was pretty good, although I'm a daredevil, so, you know, I never was scared.
I was going to ask you if you've ever been terrified of a moment on stage. I didn't think about actual physical maiming or death.
Oh,
so.
Yes. No, terrified, sure. You know, when I was, especially when I was first starting out, you know, opening nights or the first preview can be horribly terrifying. You don't know what the audience is going to think, and, you know, it's like, it is really like jumping off into a chasm, you know.
Well, it's been
very exciting.
It's been a great conversation with you, Rebecca. I know they're excited to have you here. Kim, last time, for those who want to go out to Lata Lenya, you said get there early on Saturday night.
Right.
But any registration in advance or anything like that?
Nope. Just show up, and we'll be glad to see you.
So starts 11 a.m. Saturday morning, but then Saturday night, the final start at what time?
8 p.m.
8 p.m. Have a great time.
Exciting.
And Rebecca, we're looking forward to seeing you here, and you're generous with your time this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan, so much. And Kim, I'll see you soon. I can't wait.
Me too.
All right. And Kim,
okay.
Thank you so much, and Have a great weekend yourself, Kim.
Thank you.
Great fun talking to you about the La Leña competition. Let's take a short break, come back and talk Classical Idol with our own Julia Figueres and the man behind Classical Idol. It's all next right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. Are you like me? Are you addicted to House of Cards as well? Well, it's not hyperbole to say that a big reason so many fans love the show is the fascinating music. Jeff Beal is the man who created it. He's going to join us on the program, talk about his Eastman and Rochester ties, and talk about creating great music for television. It's Tuesday on Connections.
Thinker, pundit, and NPR regular David Brooks says we live our lives these days focused on the wrong goals.
We live in a culture I call the culture of the big me, where we're really praised and rewarded for celebrating ourselves all the time.
David Brooks explores a better path in his latest book, The Road to Character. That conversation today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. What a fun 1 o'clock hour it is on this Monday afternoon. Hope you're enjoying this beautiful sunny day. And let's continue the conversation about these wonderful high-end singing competitions that Rochester is blessed with this weekend. We just talked La Leña. Now we're going to talk about Classical Idol. And we're going to bring in Eric Townell, who is Rochester Oratorio Society Artistic Director and in so many ways the brains behind Classical Idol. Great to see you here.
Thank you, Evan. Good to see you, too.
Thank you for being here. And with us also in studio is the great Julia Figueres, who's the music director of Classical 91.5, a midday host, and the most demanding judge on the panel. Is that...
That's what I'm told. I'm told.
You're the one that they fear the most.
I hear that. I hear that. I'm very demanding, especially when it comes to shoes.
I always love when Julia and I get a microphone together. It's fabulous. In just a moment, I think we're going to be talking to Constance Fee as well,
wonderful.
Who's also a judge for Classical Idol. But a little history here. We talked about the history of La Leña, the history of Classical Idol. We're getting close to a decade now. Eric, take us through the history.
Right. It started in 9th year. That makes it what year it started?
2006
would have been the first, I guess, my first year here. Mm-hmm. And so it has grown from a very, very much a local event to something that attracts international talent and places people out into international performance opportunities with good prizes and good opportunities.
Okay, and opera only in this one?
Well, it's opera, oratorio,
okay,
art song, and people do choose to sing musical theater as well. And so all of the genres are open to us, but in general, we look for the best all-around singer, the one who communicates the best and performs the best.
And unlike La Leña, this case, we get to see the judges deliberate and give me a sense for that.
Well, that's a wonderful part of the evening, and this is why it's so wonderful to have Julia Figueres on our panel. And she's been on many times, and it's always wonderful to have you with us, Julia. And the reason is because the feedback that the judges offer is of such a high level and so apropos to the telling detail that separates the great artist from those who are not quite the full picture yet. It's remarkable, and everybody walks away feeling as though they've learned so much and just been inspired to achieve virtuosity in whatever else they do in their life just by listening to these performers and the comments they receive.
So, go ahead, Julia.
The comments are I think, tough but not mean. This isn't a Simon Cowell knock them down and make them cry thing. This is really constructive stuff. From everything from the choice of music to the performance of music to the clothes that somebody might choose to wear, because that's all part of the presentation as well. Well,
and the artists, unlike La Leña, they're not coached in advance. I mean, they're, mm-hmm. And in fact, I don't even look at a photo or a bio as the original selections are made. It is strictly on the quality of the audition recording that they send us. And so then the whole rest of the package gets assembled later.
Let me bring in a judge who's been doing it for 8 of the 9 years. That's Constance Fee, and Constance is a vocal program director on the faculty of the Roberts Wesleyan College Department of Music and Performing Arts. Thanks for taking the time to join us, Constance.
Hello, Evan. It's great to be with you all. Hello, Julia. Hi, Eric.
Connie. How nice.
Hi.
Now, Constance, everyone's got a little bit of a different angle as a judge, and I'm curious to know what stands out to you most when you are hearing these performers at Classical Idol.
Well, I have to agree with my colleagues in that they have about 2 to 3 seconds when they walk on stage for us to start assembling our reactions to them and having an immediate response to how they look, how they carry themselves, how they walk. And they display immediately whether or not they're confident, whether or not they're prepared, and whether or not they know how to present themselves visually. And I agree completely with Julia, down to the shoes that right. you walk on with. It just, it matters.
But I have to say, I have to say, Julia, ahead. There was one time when you said to one of the singers, now, when you sang this line, you were holding the mirror in your left hand, and then all of a sudden you were looking at your reflection in your right hand. And this was something that the artist just had not connected, but it was right. part of that, and that's where a drama background, such as you bring to the judging, will often find that telling detail. You know, that the singer has just not quite worked through yet. And that's, you know.
Do you remember the moment, Julia?
I do.
You
I
do?
And we had a countertenor once who had the most incredibly good sense memory, right down to we opened up, he was singing something from, that's Witch's Song from Hansel and Gretel. And he yes. opened up the you remember this, Connie. And he opened
I
up.
Do.
He opened up the, it mimed opening up the oven door, and he kicked that door shut with his foot, and I swear that door was in the same place in the air. I mean, it was absolutely perfect. So he clearly had worked that out. Uh-huh. This is where the door yeah. is, and this is how I'm going to use it.
It's interesting you absolutely. Say that, because getting the wrong hand of a mirror, for example, might be just enough to distract an audience and to take you out of a performance. And that's why I think absolutely. That kind of an attention to detail, if some people think it's nitpicking, it matters, Julia.
It does. It does. I agree with you, Connie. It, right down to the shoes. Right down to
absolutely.
The shoes.
Are the shoes
absolutely.
Fabulous? The shoes must be fabulous, I guess.
They have to be fabulous. They have to be appropriate.
They have to be appropriate. You know? They have to be appropriate. Well, well said here. We're talking Classical Idol, the ninth year, and you're hearing from some of the judges there. How many total judges are?
There are five this year. Although by the time the finals roll around, I generally don't have much to say because I've already had my listen to the recordings. And it's really for the audience to enjoy the interaction of the artists with the judges that we have and the interaction of the judges among themselves. And that's what makes the evening so special.
It really is a wonderful opportunity. And as I said, the first impression they give is it's going to go into the mix. But as soon as they start singing, then we go into another level of judging. And a lot of the things that were just said can apply to this, too. Have they thought things through? Are they truly prepared? Do they mean every word they're saying? Are they musically prepared? Are they together with the accompanist?
And what's interesting to me, among many other things about Classical Idol, is the fact that, look, of the people having this conversation right now, I know the very, very, very least about operatic singing and classical singing. But I remember talking to Aaron Beagleisen, a young man who is a great talent, I think at Eastman now, and went to McQuaid, a big operatic voice. And when I first met him, he had turned 18, and I said, oh, you're an opera singer. And he said, no, I am learning to sing opera, but, you know, it's hard at 18 to grow into your voice. It takes years to grow into a voice, to develop the stamina, to build it up, etc. And so that was the first time I had been sort of taken out of that expectation that, well, someone 18 could be a finished product. Not a finished product, but you are judging on Classical Idol people who are typically how old?
Well, the age limit this in our competition is up to 35.
Up
and
to 35.
So we're seeing the next range of artists, for instance, where Lotalania's limit is 32. We might see the artist who is already well into a career, who has professional management, who is singing professional roles on numerous stages, who has won prior awards on very prestigious events, and is coming to Rochester to establish the kind of connection that this particular competition brings. And also to get the perspective on their performance from some of the judges that we have. And Evan, just to go on a second, I'm so glad you mentioned Aaron Beagleisen because he is a product of Rochester. And both of the organizations I work for, our first name is Rochester, Rochester Oratorio Society and Rochester Lyric Opera. And Classical Idol is the top of the tier, but we have development opportunities for vocalists at all levels up to and including Classical Idol from the high school school level singer as a chorister to the teachers who are in their careers as choral fellows and then classical idol. And it's the same at the opera company, a whole continuum of development for singing. So in that regard, these events are different than other events that we have in town.
Now, this started out and remains a fundraiser for Rochester Oratorio Society.
That's correct. Uh-huh.
And that's why, if you want to attend, there's a couple different ways you can attend, and there are tickets to buy, and you can get them now, Eric?
Absolutely. They're on brown paper tickets, but also through the ROS website at rossings.org/classical idol, or you could call the office at 473-2234.
Okay, and the details on when everything is unfolding this weekend?
Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock at Asbury First United Methodist Church on East Avenue, there is the semifinal round of 20 singers. And these are singers selected from all over the nation, 69 applicants. And that is free, open to the public, and we just ask you to RSVP. And you can watch the entire round perform. And then Saturday evening at 7 p.m. at Temple Brith Kodesh on Elmwood Avenue is the final round with the live judging and with the live performance.
Okay. I was talking to Brenda Tremblay, our colleague who is emceeing the event. And Constance, let me ask you briefly. I when I was talking to Brenda, you know, she mentioned that so often in these kind of settings, classical idol, you hear these soaring voices and these beautiful performances. And if you're not trained, to you, it may sound wonderful and magical. And then you hear the judges start talking. You go, wow. I mean, the layered nuance that they understand. And Constance, can you tell us a little bit about what judges might pick up on that someone like me, who will absolutely love the performances but might not be trained to understand some of the nuance?
There's a lot of vocal technique that is commented on, and we would notice something as simple as how they begin the first sound that they make. It's called the onset. Is that clean? Is it blossoming into a beautiful phrase? We talk a lot about their foreign language diction, about the phrasing, and making it clear to us that they truly understand what they're saying and what they're singing about. And that, you know, it's funny. A lot of people can have the finest technique you've ever heard. But if they don't have something to say with it, it doesn't really matter. And I think that's something that we're looking for, too, is an individual interpretation, a unique perspective, and something that they're saying about themselves to us.
And selection. Selection is so important.
Yeah.
You know, we had, I remember a young tenor came in, and he sang something from Tannhäuser. He sang it beautifully, but I remember specifically the judge saying, you were just not ready for that. That
was baritone singing Ungemeinholder Abendstern, and he was,
yes,
it's Wagner. He's very, very young, and he sang it beautifully, but it's not, in my opinion, it's not wise to present something at that age.
Just the emotional heft wasn't ready to handle it?
Exactly. That, and in considering vocal development, where is that going to lead? What do you do after that? That's something that should come after, I think, more prerequisites have been met.
And yet, one of our judges for this classical idol did what I felt was one of the finest performances and selections ever, Jonathan Beyer, when he did News from Nixon in China. It was drop-dead, absolutely drop-dead.
Stunning, and it was the whole picture. I mean, it was really somebody who could walk out, and sure enough, he did walk out and sing it at the Metropolitan Opera very shortly thereafter.
That's such a great success story. Everyone always wants to know, who are your favorite success stories, or do you love to watch the quote-unquote graduates or people who've come through classical idol?
Well, you know, to me, what I was saying before is our first name is Rochester. I want to see the artists develop a connection to our area and to our resources here, to know a little bit about WXXI, to know a little bit about the Philharmonic and the other organizations here. Jonathan Beyer won our competition, and very shortly afterward, he was back here singing with the Chamber Orchestra. He was back here singing with the Choral Festival. I mean, Rochester has come to mean a lot to him in his career. Everywhere he goes, it is on his resume, and he speaks very well of our community, the way he was treated here, and the success it has brought him to perform in classical idol. And that means a great deal to us in the Oratorio Society. It's not just the momentary finances that we get that evening, but it's the connection to the community that means so much to us.
And so we're talking about the 2010 winner, Jonathan Byer.
That's correct.
Who will be here this weekend. Mm-hmm. And if we could, I'd love to just listen to, I only have a brief clip. I wish I had Nixon in China of him. I have a brief clip of him singing Lament of Ian the Proud. And,
okay.
And for our audience, who I just want you to hear the quality. So again, this is Jonathan Byer performing, not necessarily a classical idol. I just want you to hear that this is the kind of people who are coming for this event this weekend. Let's listen to Jonathan Byer. Okay, so I'm going to make a terribly unqualified comment, and I'm going to let the judges tell me how wrong this is. But so often we think of these soaring moments. Mm-hmm. That the beginning of that clip from Jonathan Byer was this strong moment. He's belting, it's higher notes, but sort of the darkness and the lower notes seem to me, first of all, I don't know how you hit notes that low that beautifully. And it shows a range that's amazing that makes me appreciate not just the loud belted stuff. It's the full range of it.
My, you should come to Classical Idol. That's exactly what people are saying out there. It's phenomenal.
Constance?
I think Jonathan has something I haven't heard used that often in operatic terms, but he has gravitas. There's just such a depth and a weight to what he presents, not just in the size and beauty of his voice, but in his presence and how he delivers. It's powerful.
And you know what? Katie Lewick was like that when she came out.
Oh, how about that?
When she came out, and she was a winner as well. Mm-hmm. And when Katie came out and sang that same thing, she came out and you knew she was done. She was the package.
That's right.
And she's singing the Queen of the Night all over the world.
Right,
though.
And it was in Classical Idol that one of our judges said to her, have you ever sung Queen of the Night? And she said, you know, that's a role I've always wanted to try. I haven't done it yet. And the judge said, I think you would do well with that. And it has been a real launching pad for her career ever since.
I think within a year or two of that, she was singing it at the Met. So, and I think it's really interesting. Our last five winners, three of them are Met singers. Mm-hmm. They're on the roster at the Met.
And this year we actually have two judges who are closely connected to the Met, Jonathan Byer, as you've heard, and then Gildo D'Annunzio, who's a phenomenal living resource in the world of musical performance, because he was Luciano Pavarotti's private coach. In other words, he taught Pavarotti the Italian repertoire that he was going to perform in the coming season. Gildo would go to Italy and live with the Pavarottis in close proximity and work every day with the artist and teach the music to him, take him through the roles, teach him literally note by note and word by word. And this is the kind of perspective he'll be offering to our artists at Classical Idol.
But you know what? You're a very modest guy. We couldn't have people like Katie Lewick and Jonathan Byer and judges like Gildo D'Annunzio if you didn't create something that is as good as it is. And you had a really terrific vision, Eric, and you put together something which has become really important. And you know, we should give you props for having this vision and being able to put forward what is a very well-regarded and very serious and yet fun evening of singing.
Well, thank you so much for that.
Constance, I know you've said it's been remarkable to watch what again began as an Oratorio Society fundraiser with most competitors coming from local high schools, colleges, and universities to what it is now.
Absolutely. And I think, Eric, if I remember correctly, you said that just started out as a lighthearted kind of fun event to raise some money, and it just took on a complete life of its own. And I love the fact that we've retained the fun part. as it's gotten more and more serious.
And, you know, I know that when I talk to my colleagues at Eastman, for instance, that that what they say is true, that all roads lead through Rochester, and this is something I prize very highly, and that Eastman students, or those with Eastman training, have done very well in this competition over the years and continue to. And they they figure every year in the semifinalists, and they go from our competition into very nice opportunities.
But, Eric, let me ask you what I asked Kim Kowalki in our first half hour as we talked about La Leña. When was the moment that you realized it had grown from that kind of locally focused to an international event?
It was year seven. Maybe it was year six or seven.
Just a couple of years
yeah,
ago.
Just a couple of years ago, and we had 72 applicants, and they were from Canada and from all across the country, and that we had our first international applicants, and it has never looked back for an instant. You know, this year the level is so incredibly high. I can't wait for Julia and Connie to hear them. I've heard them all. The semifinal round is going to be something worth hearing, and that's a free day on Friday. And I know those artists will work because the Philharmonic has hired artists from our semifinal round for their solo roles in their productions. And so it's a very worthwhile thing. But I wanted to mention, Jonathan Beyer, could you tell us about your masterclass on Thursday, Connie?
Yes, it will be the first event at the new Lyric Theater, which was just purchased by the Rochester Lyric Opera. The first event will be a Jonathan Beyer masterclass at 7:30 at the new Lyric Theater on East Avenue, 440 East Avenue. There will be six singers. All of them are either Rochester Lyric Opera or Robert's Concerto Aria winners. And he will hear each student sing, each performer sing, and then make comments and help them maybe get a different perspective on what they're presenting and hopefully help them get further down the road in their performing. So it's free and open to the public, and we hope people come and see the new venue.
Again, that's Thursday night?
Thursday at 7:30.
And you just heard Eric mention the semifinals, free admission, 1-6 on Friday. And then the final gala competition is 7 o'clock Saturday night at Temple Brith Kodesh. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so once again, if for our listeners to get tickets, they can go where for the finals?
They can go to the Brown Paper Tickets. Or they could call the Rochester Oratorio Society office at 473-2234 or find us on the web at rossings.org.
You mentioned gravitas when it comes to Jonathan Beyer and some of the best. And, you know, this morning as I was kind of getting ready for the show, talking to people around the office, we talked about the fact that life is filled with emotion and sometimes tragedy. And opera seems to be the kind of the magnifying glass, as Brenda and Julia have talked about. It's a magnifying glass on sometimes on our emotion and some of the real dramas in our life. It's played up on stage in a way that is heightened, and it probably does require that gravitas. But I guess you don't. Is it that you're either born with it or you're not, or can you grow into it? Is it possible for someone who's 18 or 19 or 20 to have that and to match it? Is it rare? Julia, let me start with you first, and I'd love to hear from the judges on that.
I think it's the same problem of playing King Lear. You play King Lear, you have to be old enough to really feel all that depth, but you have to be young enough to get through the performance alive because it's so grueling. And I think that there are any number of roles that you really aren't ready for. When a 20-year-old isn't ready to sing Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, it sounds funny to say, but that's one you have to kind of grow into. And there are lighter roles. We had anything by Gilbert and Sullivan, for example, great starting point to move into something more serious. I think it's just like any good role. You're ready for it or you're not. And in maybe at a younger age, you might sort of look like you're ready for it, but I think we can all say, no, not yet.
Constance, what do you think?
Well, I think you are born with the potential or the capacity. Some people discover it sooner and allow themselves to grow into it. Other people might work for years, not know they have it, and then hit a role or a teacher or a coach or an experience where something is unlocked. And they are what appear to be the overnight successes who've been working for 10 or 15 years at it. You know, it is I do believe it is something that you have and something that you discover and something that you grow into. There's a poetic sensitivity of vocal coordination that you simply have to have, or it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
you have a good ear.
Eric, this is the opera world question that I often hear in regards to just people who write music. And once in a while, I'll read a story in the New Yorker that asks the question: can happy people write great music? You know, do you need to be tormented? Do you need to have gone through a lot? This is kind of the opera world's question in the same way.
Well, you know, I think there is a way to be so connected to the text, first as the creative artist and second as the performer, that you are able to put your own worldly concerns aside. Edward Elgar is one, for instance, who just seemed to be the most placid Victorian gentleman, and, you know.
Rossini.
Rossini
did nothing but eat, drink, and womanize and wrote one great opera after another one. He did 33 and did nothing but eat, drink, and womanize for the rest of his life.
And fascinatingly, the only anecdote I know about Rossini is that he went to visit Mozart later, Beethoven, and later in Beethoven's life, and Rossini left Beethoven's apartment in tears, saying, "How could a man of such greatness live in such squalor?" He didn't understand the torment, and I did not know, Julie, until you just told me that Rossini was okay. He was pretty happy. He must have looked at Beethoven and said, "How can that happen?" And you know, everyone must be assuming Rossini must be tormented. See the kind of stories that come out when you get a great panel of judges together, and our time is running dry here, but you can see them in action as judges, not only the great vocal performances you're going to hear with Classical Idol, but such great insight on music, and we're so glad that Constance Fee could join us. Constance, thanks for taking the time, and we will see you out there this weekend.
So happy to be with you all. See you soon.
Julia, I'll see you down the hall,
yes,
my dear.
Will.
It's always great to see Julia Figueres, music director of 91.5, Classical 91.5, midday host, and a judge this weekend. Eric, congratulations on all the success here, and have a wonderful weekend with Classical
Thank
Idol.
Thank you so much, Evan, for
it's
this.
It's been such a fun hour talking a lot of Lenya and Classical Idol. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you enjoy this beautiful afternoon, and thanks to Valerie LaBanca for the great engineering job she does. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is member-supported public radio.